Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is how to ask for anything. And my very special guest is the Super Coach, Steve Chandler. He's been a guest on the show before. He's the author of, how many books are you an author of now, Steve?
Well, it's a little over 20.
A little over 20? You're working on 21?
Well, actually, it's 23 now.
23 books, including Fearless, Creating the Courage to Change the Things You Can. And I think next up is Shift Your Mind, Shift the World.
That's right.
Fantastic. And so, Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. So the reason I wanted to do a show on this topic is it seems to me that for so many people, the biggest thing between them and having what they want is their reluctance to ask for it.
Right. Yeah, it really is. It sure shows up in my clients when I do coaching with individuals, even when I work with sales teams for corporations, and I've trained a number of corporations in sales training. It is the primary fear, and I think we carry it over from childhood. I know in my own personal history, I suffered from it as well. So I've got a personal relationship to that fear myself.
So what do you think that fear is about? Because it seems, if you look at it, it seems irrational. It's like, what are they going to say?
Yeah, exactly. It really seems like they can say yes, they can say no, and that's fine, and it's good that they can. But it isn't rational. You're right. That's just the whole problem. It's very irrational. I have a private theory as to where it comes from.
Ooh, share.
All right. Well, my theory is that when we're smaller, when we're little kids, that we have a very strong desire to please people and to go around and sort of manipulate our way into getting things. So we always wait for the right moment to ask, and we ask in these kind of manipulative, twisted ways. If you've got kids or if you've been a kid, if you fall into either of those two categories,
okay,
you can remember saying, Dad, I know you're going to say no, so I'm not even going to ask. And Dad says, oh, well, try me. And so there's all these really difficult things as children where we have all this roundabout ways that we learn to do it. And then in junior high school, now this is where my theory comes in. In junior high school and then high school, we equate rejection with just about the worst possible thing because we're just starting to truly socialize in the years when the hormonal things are kicking in, and the idea of being unlovable, unlikable, an outcast, rejected is just so painful that we really learn not to ask and not to want to ask and to avoid asking and to equate being told no with absolute rejection. And so when I work with salespeople, professionals, and grown-ups of all different kinds, they have this fear inside of really asking for something where they're their own quality of work is at stake, or any kind of evaluation is imagined in the no. So the fear of rejection is just huge. It's staggering.
And so if
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if the fear is so big, what give us a little bit of the upside, because I know for me that I've found that a lot of the things that I've accomplished have happened about 1,000 times faster once I got willing to actually ask. But what are some of the other gains that make it worth? Because I can imagine just hearing, oh, great, okay, so it's a living hell. I think I'll pass.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, the upside is once you wake up and once you really see that nothing bad can happen from my asking unless I make up some story around it, then you really shoot ahead of everybody else in your field because you have such an advantage. You can move your life forward so quickly with being able to ask yourself, what is it that I want that I don't have right now? Who can I ask? And not only who can I ask directly for it, but there's a subcontext to this, and that is, who can I ask to help me get it? who could I ask that would know how to ask another person to get it? So a lot of my asking the last few years is people where I don't really know who could give me this thing, whatever it would be, but I know people who know people, and I'm always wondering who could help me with this, who could go out and do some work on my behalf. Now, that's something people just don't do because they're so conditioned to pleasing people and being afraid of people.
Okay, now, I'm voicing this because I hear this is the fear in the listener's unconscious mind. Does everyone hate you?
For asking?
Yeah.
Well, you mean once one starts asking a lot?
Yeah.
No, because it's really quite flattering. If I ask, will you work with me? Will you be my client? Would you like to try this together? And will you help me find somebody? I asked the person the other day, could you put me in touch with Ellen DeGeneres, or could you help me find a way to reach her directly so I don't have to go through all her people? And that person said, man, I'm glad you asked me. I know somebody who knows her really well, and he grabbed the phone right while I was sitting there. So people don't hate me. I just imagine that they would. And it's that junior high school hangover that I imagine I would be rejected. Now, every once in a while, someone says, well, no. But you really know that that's their thing. They're testy. They're in a bad mood. They've got some story about why would I help you. And then I just feel sorry for that person because they're missing out on the real fun it is to help somebody succeed at what they're doing. You know, when somebody comes to the door selling cookies or something and says, I need to sell two more boxes to get to Hawaii, and I get to go with the Girl Scouts to Hawaii. Will you buy my last two boxes? I want to buy them. I want to help.
Okay, and now I'm not sure that the devil really needs an advocate, but I'm going to take the job for a minute.
No, you're great at that, Michael. I'm counting on that from you.
So that's
and
true,
let's be straight with the listeners. This is the real you asking these questions here.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, I've got a call earlier today from somebody going, hey, is that Mr. Neil? I'm Bob from Jones Home Redevelopment, and we are in your area. Now, I didn't want to buy his last two boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
Right, exactly right. And you were free to say, Bob, not now. Please send me something in the mail. I don't make these kinds of conversations over the phone. See ya. Slam. Now, you're free to do that, and if Bob is not insane, he'll like the fact that you're free to say yes or no. He'll be fine with your freedom. And he's trying something out. He's trying to see how many people will actually respond and invite him in. But there's nothing wrong with saying no to Bob. What's your question? It's mean to say no to Bob, maybe?
Well, it's just that I'm sort of then going over into Bob's shoes and going, boy, I'd hate to have that job where I had to call all those people up and ask if they wanted some home redevelopment.
Right. Well, I would hate that job, too, because unless I really had something that could help somebody. So let's say I've got ways to repair a roof, and I am going to be in the neighborhood, and I'm calling around. And I know my work is good, and I'm cheerful, and I tell people, I'm in the neighborhood, it's been storming here a lot, if you need help on a roof, I'd love to help you, and they say yes or they say no. I'm not going to hate making those calls if, number one, it's efficient, if it really works. If I'm not bothering people so much that it annoys them so they can't even hear the goodness in my service, then I want to continue calling. So these spam-type calls, these telemarketing calls, sometimes they're so bothersome that they don't serve the recipient of the call. And I would tell those people, stop doing that. You don't have to ask in ways that automatically annoy people.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Rebecca in London. Rebecca, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Hello. I would like to know what's the best way of asking so that I get the best chance of a yes.
I think the best way is the most clumsy, authentic, real, just wander right in and say, I would really love to ask a big favor of you, and not have it be too roundabout or sugar-coated or manipulated or someone thinks, well, you know, she's been building up to this all along. Why didn't she just ask me from the start? So I don't think there's any real technique except to just say, may I, will you do this for me? I would really love it if we could work together, or if you could do, tell me if you would do me this favor, or if you would work with me, or if I could have that loan, or you would give me this amount of money. Is this something you would like to do? How can I make it work for both of us? And that's not rehearsed. I want to get my own enthusiasm for what I'm asking for real authentic. I don't want to disconnect from that. And that's a mistake people make. They get so scared of asking, they have forgotten how good they feel about the thing they're asking for and how good it'll make both people feel. And then it lands flat, and the other person is kind of picks up on how you don't believe in it and how you are reluctant to ask for it. And then they don't say yes. The best way to ask is to be in touch with what a good thing it would be if that person said yes, and allow that to get into your voice, in your face, in your voice tones, in your demeanor. And that makes a yes a lot more likely.
Well, what is it that you're wanting to ask for, Rebecca?
I have heard Steve talk before, and there wasn't a particular thing in mind, but I'm also aware that I think there are cultural differences between, for instance, the US and the UK. And Americans seem to find it easier to ask for stuff and for people to say yes. Maybe Britain seems different somehow. But I could be wrong.
Well, and you could be wrong, and I wouldn't let that stop you, though. And I hear what you're saying. I've got, and Michael's got tons of friends and clients from England, so he knows even more than I do, and I have a few. And there is a bit of a British reserve involved here culturally, but I wouldn't let that stop you, because if you're asking for something that benefits both of you if it's given, then it wouldn't matter what culture that person was in. If they can really catch your enthusiasm for it, they'll really take a look at it.
Yeah, I find you just have to add in about 4 more apologies if you're asking in England. Look, I'm so sorry. I know it's a terrible imposition, but it just, if it wouldn't be too much bother, I just was wondering, could I borrow a cup of sugar?
Yeah. Well, Americans are kind of clumsy, and Americans do find it easier to ask, but still not very easy. It's amazing to me how many people tell me, well, I've got this person who's a potential client, and he may work with me, and he may not, and what I'm hoping for is he'll do this. And I'll finally say, did you ask him if he would want to do that? Oh, no, I didn't want to scare him away. I didn't want to push things. And so they're just terrified.
So, Rebecca, let me ask you, if there was one thing that you could ask for, or one person that you could ask for something that if they said yes, it would make a real difference in whatever it is that you're doing, what would the bold request be? What would be the big question that when you think about it, you just go, you might not make that exact
today.
Sound. There
isn't anything off the top of my head, but one of the questions I ask, or I formulate a lot, so I guess it would be if I asked this question a lot, not necessarily just the once, but it would be would my client like me to design an album for them? Because it would be so amazing to show how their photographs could look.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful question. Boy, if you asked me that, I'd be flattered that you asked. And especially if you honor my freedom to say, no, I can't, gee, I don't think I can afford that right now, Rebecca. Tell me more. I can't see any negative or downside or any reason why you'd ever regret asking. And they have their grown-ups, and you're actually respecting their freedom and independence, because they have the freedom to say, not now, no thank you, I don't really want that right now, and you can say, great, I just wanted to know, because how tragic it is, and this happens a lot, that if you had asked, they would have loved it. They didn't know that you were willing to do it or that you even wanted to do it. And so they didn't ask you because they were afraid to ask if you would do that for them, and you were afraid to ask if they would like it. And it goes undone. This happens so many times that it's a tragedy. It's much better to risk whatever downside there is with a person saying no, thank you.
So just for fun, and as your punishment for phoning in today, Rebecca, what's one question that you're willing to commit to asking this week that maybe you wouldn't have asked before you called into the show?
Okay, it'll be that question with clients I haven't been in touch with for a couple of months or a number of months, and to bring them up and say, hey, would you like me to do this?
Yeah, because you're offering a beautiful service. Can I help you in this way? Would you like me to do this for you? And if you would, I would love to do it. Just let me know. I mean, if somebody calls me and says, I would love to do it. And I had a person who got in touch with me and said, if you ever need someone to design the cover of your next book, let me know, because I would love to have that chance. I'd love to have that opportunity to do that for you. Well, that was just total positive experience for me. And I just held them in high regard. I filed their name and later got a hold of her, and she's been designing book covers for a while for me. And what if she'd never asked? What if she thought, oh, boy, I'll be pushy, and who am I compared to him, and what will he think of me, and he knows me socially, and what will this do to our relationship? Well, she didn't. She was just bold and asked. You'll never regret it.
So, Rebecca, let me ask you, how did you feel when I just asked you to do that, to go and find someone to ask?
Okay, because it's a question I've been thinking about for asking for ages, but maybe doing it via email, but having talked on the phone, thinking, no, this is much better to ask face to face.
Okay, so it was in service of you. In other words, you feel like, hey, you know what, this, I'm kind of glad he asked, because that just makes it easier for me to just say, okay, I'm going to do this thing I've been thinking about for a while anyways.
It's also the kind of question that you always ask.
So you know what you're getting.
Your callers are ready for you.
If I ring up, I'm going to get something like that.
Well, fair enough. My point, and I did have one, was that if the question is coming from that sincere place of service, it really is okay. It's okay both for the person who's asked, and it's okay if they don't want to do it. Because it wasn't about me. It wasn't about, oh my gosh, she didn't like my question. It was just about, oh, here's a way that I might be able to be of service. And does it benefit me? Sure, it benefits me. Why shouldn't it benefit me? Because it's benefiting all of us. And that's sort of the same thing as with your question. So you have your homework.
Thank you ever so much.
Thank you for voting, Rebecca. And it seems to me, Steve, now you've got this group. I got this email from Steve about at the beginning of the month about a new group that he's putting together called the Ask Project. And one of the things in the email, and I'll ask you a little bit more about the project itself, but that really kind of made me shiver a little was something you said about, you know, why are we so unwilling to ask? And one of the things you talked about was, in fact, the junior high thing.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that I just thought was really interesting was looking at the ways of eliminating those fears.
Yeah.
So how are some of the ways when we have the fears come up, you know, how do we begin to move through those fears?
Well, I really believe that there's practice here involved. And so I want to practice two things. The state in which I put myself prior to asking. So like with Rebecca, if she can really visualize and see what a nice service she would do for someone and how well she would work and how hard she would work for them and how much she would love it and how they would benefit and how good it would be for them. Well, that's step one. That takes practice to get myself in that place. and then make my request. Could you help me with this, or may I have this, or would you like to do this with me? Would you like to work with me on this? And so it's practicing the communicating creatively and deliberately versus just wandering into life and having our fears dictate everything. The human beings have no idea how creative they can be throughout the day. They just wake up and react. They describe things, and they do threat assessments with their beautiful mind and assess the fear and how would my feelings be hurt if they said no? What would they think of me if I asked them? So nothing but threat assessment instead of creating the future, the life, the world that I want to live in through asking.
So it seems to me that the process of asking, there's two things that come from it. One of them is the result, because sometimes people will say yes. And the other is, it sounds like there's a large transformational element.
Yeah, there really is, because it restores my adulthood. It really solidifies my adult standing in life. And it has the little kid, the junior high school kid who's so afraid to ask Peggy Sue to dance. That cluster of emotions that it represents as a real being that comes up and becomes primary in the face of rejection, that subsides and sits down and takes a nap and falls asleep in front of the TV and just doesn't show up anymore in an asking situation, because I don't want that part of me to be there when I'm asking. I want the grown-up part who's creating a future to be asking. And that takes practice to come from there. It's like a pitcher who practices taking a deep breath and coming from a relaxed place in his body when he throws a certain pitch. He has to practice the preparation for the pitch, not just the pitch.
Okay, so as you look back on your career, because I know you often tell stories on yourself about different places in your learning curve where things were very difficult for you. When did asking go from oh crap to oh goody, or has it even made that transition?
Oh yeah, it has, because when I moved it into the creative realm, when I took it out of the scared, am I good enough, what will they think of me, when I took it away from childhood fears, I took it out of that category, and I put it into creativity. And I did a lot of things. It was the same thing as when I'm writing a book or when I used to write songs. How many chapters, how many words am I going to write today? How many hours am I going to spend writing? And I put that on my wall. I'm going to write 3,000 words. Well, I'm going to ask 5 people to join my mastermind group today. I'm going to invite 5 people in. Who might they be? And I'd put their names down, and I'd make a really good game of it. So it became, I look forward to it. Who are my people today? I look forward to the calls. I'll talk to them about it. And at some point, I will simply say, does this look like something you would like to do? Now, that's such an innocent, sweet, inoffensive question to anybody. We've been talking about this. Does it look like something you would like to do? And they can say, yes, it does. Great. And then we talk about what steps they need to take to do it. Or if they say, I don't think so, not at this time. And I can say, fine, thank you for telling me that. So tell me, and then I can either talk further when I hear the no, and I can examine that with them and relax about it. But I'm okay with no. No is perfectly fine, because once you get okay with no, no's just great. Then I don't fear it, and it won't stop me from making the call.
Okay, we're coming up on a break. Just something to listen to think about over the break. As you're listening to this, what's the one or two or three questions that are sitting there, the one or two or three asks, that if you ask them, it would make an amazing difference in how far you got towards your goal or in the quality of your life? And just have a little think about that. We're going to be back with more Steve Chandler. If you're on hold, hang on. We will get you on. William and Donna, you're next in the queue. And we will be right back with more of Supercoach right after this break.
strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with Steve Chandler. He's the author of 23 books, including his latest, Shift Your Mind, Shift the World. And he's also the founder of Club Fearless, the international mastermind, which you can find out more about at www.clubfearless.net. And our next caller, I think, is a member of Club Fearless. So, William, welcome to the show. And what can we do for you today?
Thank you for taking my questions. The question I have accounts all across North America, and my job is to go in and do some training with them. So my question is how can I ask differently to get my accounts to participate in a training program and also return my phone calls?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the number one reason why people return phone calls is out of curiosity. It's not out of value. And that's where most salespeople go wrong. They leave a message and they say, you know, it would really help you if you called me, or I've got a wonderful service for you if you work with me, and all of that. And they interpret that as a sales message, like you're trying to get something from me and I don't have time for you. But if you leave a message that's something like, you know, I just called up your website on the internet, I took a look at a couple of your buildings, and then I cross-checked with some tax statements from the county, and something very interesting popped up. Please give me a call. Now, I know a lot of commercial real estate people who do this. They do a little research. They find something out about a prospective client, and then they say, I've been looking into some possibilities for you and some... and I've looked at your property down on Main Street, and I had a quick question about it. There might be a way for me to assist you with paying less property tax. I'm not sure. Only take a minute to find out. Give me a call. Now, when I arouse curiosity like that, if I say I ran into a friend of yours the other day, had a very interesting story he told me about you, but let's talk. Give me a call. I want to arouse curiosity. And if I can arouse curiosity, I wonder what this is about, I wonder what he's found, I wonder what he's got for us, and for you, if you've got something new you want to work your accounts with, I've got a new program, it's interesting, it's a little unorthodox, and you might hate it, but you might love it, give me a call. Well, I'm curious, what's he talking about? So I will return the call if I'm curious. So try to find a way to have people's curiosity be piqued by your call. That's number one. And the second thing is, you know, when you ask them to work with you, allow them to see how valuable that would be for them, and they will say yes. If they don't say yes, they don't see the value. You've got to really get that.
Does that make sense, William?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, that was hard for me to learn, William, because... I finally got it that whenever I ask if I'm trying to sell somebody something or enroll them in a program, if they say no, they obviously don't see enough value in it. And when I really understood that, then when people said no, I would ask myself, what could I have done in that conversation that would have allowed that person to see more value? And I would think of new things I could do, and then the next person I called, I would try those, and I would get a much better response. But on the other hand, if the person says, no, I don't have the money, or no, the economy's bad, or no this, and I just believe that, then I walk around thinking, well, because of the economy I'm not doing well, or because of this, and I'm believing what they say, and I'm not looking for how I can improve the way I ask.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, William. We'll go back to the phones in just a minute. I want to pick up on another aspect. One of the quotes that I first heard through you is the Byron Katie quote, where she says, you can have anything in life you want if you're willing to ask 1,000 people for it.
Yeah, and that's one of her Zen kind of things that opens the mind up. And because when people hear her say that, they realize that anything they really wanted and didn't get, they really did stop asking after a while. They really quit real early and long before they asked 1,000 people. And so nobody really in life has a story, well, I asked 1,000 people and still didn't get it.
Well, I always remember the story Tony Robbins used to tell about Colonel Sanders, and how he went around and would say to people, hey, I've got this fantastic chicken recipe, and you can have it. I don't even want any money. I just want a little bit of money for every piece of chicken you sell from now on. And that apparently it was 1,007, that the 1,007th person franchise that he asked was actually the first Kentucky Fried Chicken franchise, and that's how it evolved. So that number sticks in my head for that reason as well.
Well, and I'm glad he didn't listen to Katie and stop at 1,000.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember when I used to hear that story thinking, I might have made it to 3.
Yeah, right.
And then decided, not a good idea, obviously.
Yeah, and that's what most of us are like. And I was worse than any of my clients who have a problem with this, which is only about 95%. I had a worse problem. That's why it's so fun for me to coach it, because I was more afraid of asking than anyone I know.
So what got you over it? Was there an epiphany moment, or was it just...
It was the epiphany moment that it wouldn't matter if they said yes or no. It has no effect on me, really. It's just in my imagination. I had to see that, and then it was just practice it. Okay, I can see that. Now, let's practice. Let's take it into the world, and let's practice, and let's walk around, let's get on that phone, and let's wander into a group of people. Would you like this? And can I interest you in that? And would you like to help me? And it got to be fun, but it took practice. And I had to have a coach watching me, because it was one of those things that was so difficult for me that I literally paid a guy to make sure I did it, which nothing wrong with that. I mean, in fact, that's a very noble thing.
Well, I've paid you to help me with that in the past, so
yeah,
I'm going to agree with you on that.
I've paid you to help me with something that if you hadn't, I wouldn't be staring at this little dog who's lying at my feet right now. So coaching is a beautiful thing, and demonstrates your commitment to a result that has now replaced your commitment to looking good and wanting to be able to do it by yourself. And so many people say, well, I should be able to do this. I should be able to just do this myself. So they've got a greater commitment to their ego and self-image than they do to getting the result. Tiger Woods has a coach, and it's because there's a result he's after. It's not because he wants people to know that he needs a coach. It's because he doesn't care what people think about him having a coach. There's a certain level of golf he wants to play that he knows he would never play without a coach.
And I think, so if I'm listening to the show and I'm going, okay, it takes practice, but that's so amorphous that I can easily get out of it. I can sort of think I'm practicing but not really practice. Where would you recommend somebody start with this if they want to get really good at asking? And I know ultimately part of the answer is going to be do a lot of it, but what would be a great place to start?
Well, the best place to start is to create a picture, written or any way you want, of what it is you'd like to have. What would I like to have an acting career? Would I like to have my own business? What would I like to have? What kind of future would I like to design and create for myself? And get excited about it and see it, because that's what you'll get if you ask. So I want this mission I'm on. I want this place I'm going to, the Holy Grail, whatever this thing is, I want to get excited about that. And then that's the first step, because without that, just to say, well, yeah, I'm not too good at asking, I guess I'll practice it, well, that's going to fall flat. There's not a lot of inspiration or motivation to practice. So when Michael Phelps practices, he pictures the gold medals and winning the Olympics and the whole world cheering, and that gets him back in the pool at 3 a.m. And so some picture like that you're moving toward is really what has you want to practice. I want to practice today.
Okay, let's go back to the phone and let's go to Donna in L.A. Donna, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Hi. I had some questions, and I have some follow-up questions based on listening to Steve. Steve, when you talked about, you know, coming from a sincere place of service, where, you know, you see how you're serving the other person, I can understand how, you know, it's much easier to ask questions then. But what about the situation where you don't see how it serves the other person specifically? You're you know, asking them for information or a favor, like the example you gave of the person asking the person about if they knew a way to contact Ellen DeGeneres. So did you, when you made that request, did you feel like you were coming from a position of service?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I was very excited about reaching Ellen DeGeneres because I had something specific I wanted to get to her. And so I kind of got the person that I was talking to also excited about how cool that would be. And I asked them, do you know anybody who could help me with that? So you're right. In that case, there isn't... The only service is, will you join me in this adventure? And will you help me? And so it's like saying, let's say my car breaks down and in the parking lot and I need a jump. And I say to someone, do you happen to have cables and do you have 10 minutes? Can you help me here? That doesn't serve that person. But I still want to be able to ask that. And in a way, I'll tell you, here's something to keep in mind. In the end, it does serve them, because the guy who takes his jumper cables and helps me start my car, and I thank him really genuinely and say, I give him my card, if there's ever anything I can do for you, call me, or whatever I do to let him know he's really helped me, then he feels beautiful. I mean, he goes home and he's in a good mood and he tells his family, I helped a guy today. I'm 10 minutes late to the barbecue. I helped a guy start his car. And the kids look at that and they think, oh, our dad's so great. And so it really does serve people to let them help you. I know that sounds odd, but the guy that I asked to get me in touch with Ellen, he just loved it that he was able to do that for me. He was beaming. And I think you'll always find that.
You know what occurs to me as you're talking about that, it reminds me of in your book, How to Get Clients,
mm-hmm.
when you talk about if someone gives you a referral,
right.
to get back with the person and let them know that the impact it had for them to make the referral. And I'm wondering if maybe a similar approach wouldn't be helpful in this situation as well, where someone, you know, you ask them a request where they don't really, you know, there's no specific reason for them to help you other than it feels good to help,
right.
and that maybe just, you know, getting back with them later on to say, you know, thank you for giving me that information or providing that assistance to me. Here's how it helped me and the impact that it had.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's an even better answer than I had. So I'll be signing off, and you continue on with Michael.
Well, you did write a book called Relationship.
Yes.
Which strikes me as relevant here.
Yeah. Yeah, shift the relationship between the donor and the recipient in fundraising. And the people who raise money and receive money from people and the way they thank them and the way they show them that they've really made a difference in the world actually tips the balance and has the people who donated the money be more grateful now and feel great about it. And you're absolutely right that there are opportunities to keep the person in the loop, like you said. So if the Ellen Project comes to fruition, I can thank my friend for the contact and let him have some fun with it. And even if he doesn't, next time I see him, by the way, thanks so much for putting me in touch with Ellen. It was great of you. And he feels good again. So you're right. There are so many ways to make people feel good about. See, people in life want to help other people. They really want that. And we deny them that by being afraid to ask.
So, Donna, same question I have for you that I had earlier. What's a specific project that you're working on, a specific result you're looking to create, where there's maybe something that you can imagine, wow, if I could ask for that, or if I would ask, that would be great. That would really move things forward.
Well, I'm working on creating seminars, and the specific question would be there. I've identified some different people that have already been very successful with their own teleseminars, and so I would like to contact them to inquire about, you know, I understand that, you know, sometimes people will promote, well, they'll offer someone else's seminar to people that are on their list, and then it's a way to for the new person to get exposure to a list of people that they didn't have exposure to already. So the first request, I guess I do it in a two-step. First of all is maybe learn from some people, how does that work? Kind of what's the standard for, you know, how do you reciprocate with people? You know, I know often it's an affiliate program, you get some kind of a split, but how do all those details work? So that's one thing I need to find out first. And then to actually specifically approach people that I'm aware of who have been very successful about this and ask them if they would be willing to do a joint venture with me or to work with me to, you know, offer my teleseminar to people that are on their list.
Yeah, that's good.
And are you so right now, if we finished here, are you in a place where you kind of go, yeah, you know what? I not only can do that, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, I am. I've got to work a little more on, you know, more on defining more exactly what I'm going to offer to people. But in terms of how I feel about actually doing the asking, I'm feeling a lot better about it. And I think part of it is I've been starting to have these experiences. I mean, you're creating the Impossible Program. And just in the process, I'm just kind of noticing that once I committed, without even really knowing how I was going to do this, I didn't even know what I was going to do at the beginning of the 30 days. But once I made the commitment, I'm noticing that, like, people keep stepping in or events kind of keep happening to me that initially may seem like they're drawing me away from my path, but then as I open up to them, I discover that they're actually really fully supporting me in my path. And so the more I'm reminded of that, it helps me be willing to ask people, because I've taken this attitude that the universe is conspiring for my success.
Good for you. When you're on fire, everything in your path feeds the fire.
Oh, that's a wonderful way to look at it.
I just thought of that, and I can hear Michael writing that down.
Absolutely. Are you kidding?
That'll go into his next book.
Hey, you'll get credited. You know I always credit. So that's fantastic, Donna.
Yeah,
and something I just want to offer you that I find very useful is especially with people I don't already know who I'm going to approach. I really love doing research into those people and finding out what I can find out about them. And sometimes one of the first things I ask is other people who know them to tell me a little bit about them. Not so I can sort of psych myself out or kind of go, oh, God, now I know all about them. I've got a hidden thing I can dangle. But more just it lets me talk to a human being. So that instead of a cold call, instead of talking to, I don't know, a cold. I don't know what you get on the other end of a cold call. But I'm actually talking to a person that I have a sense of connection with.
Well, and there's an additional benefit to that is that you can demonstrate that person knows you've done homework and that you care enough about them to research them and to find out about them. That opens so many doors. They're so much more open to you. We have a mutual friend, Michael and I, who was talking to a person who is Muslim, who is a prospective client of his, and he read, in preparation for this initial conversation, he read the entire Quran, highlighting sticky notes and everything, read the thing from cover to cover, just so he would understand this person walking in better. And that was a demonstration to the client that this guy is really a pretty remarkable human being. If he will commit that much, even prior to my hiring him, imagine what he'll do for me when I hire him. So that homework and research is also a demonstration to your prospect that you're serious about learning all about them and you care about what they've done and you're not just making a cold call. The bad thing about a cold call is offensive to the caller and the person receiving it.
And if you don't know people who know the person you want to contact,
you find out. You search. I mean, if your IQ is over 30, you can find all kinds of things about every human on the Internet, all kinds of things, who they know, who they talk to, who their agent is, who their... You can really do amazing research.
I feel I ought to check. Your IQ is over 30, right?
I believe so.
Okay,
yes.
Great. No, I just, you know, fair, because I wanted, if not, I wanted to, like,
well, yeah,
get plan
not,
B.
Well, if not, then we drop that as an option.
Well, it's starting to sound like fun.
It is fun.
Which is great, because then it, you know, it shifts everything to,
yeah, it is fun.
To think that it's fun. And Steve, I've only been a member of Club Fearless for a few weeks, but... I mean, I've already had, you know, tremendous shifts just from reading your materials and listening to the audios. And I haven't gone through all of them yet because there are so many. But it really has been amazing how just reading a book can cause those kinds of fundamental shifts to suddenly start to regard asking people for things as being something that's fun and exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also recommend Michael's book, Super Coach, because it's one of the few books that can coach you. Now, a lot of people say, I can't afford a coach. Can I get it from a book? I would have normally said, no, sorry, get a coach. But Michael's book really can coach you. So if you don't have Super Coach, get that book. It's amazing.
Thank you. I don't have that book. I have the first book.
Well, Michael, I thought you screened your callers.
Yeah, they all.
Well, no, he did, because it's now an opportunity for you to discuss the book.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know.
Available from www.amazon.co.uk. Coming out in the United States, March 23rd.
Well,
oh, it's not
we're
available
past March, aren't we?
Yeah.
March 23rd, 2010.
Oh, but you can get the UK version.
You can get the UK
Amazon.
Version. It is
oh,
out
okay,
now.
Great.
Okay,
great.
Yeah. It's great.
Wonderful.
Absolutely great book.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Donna. Thanks for phoning in, and good luck. We'll look forward to hearing about your seminars.
Thank you.
So, Steve, we just got a few minutes left. I wanted to read you something from probably the best book I ever read on asking is a book called The Aladdin Factor by
mm-hmm.
Jack Canfield and Mark Richardson.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a list of 8 suggestions on how to ask, and I just wanted to read it out and get a quick comment from you. Ask as if you expect to get it. Ask someone who can give it to you. Be clear and specific in your requests. Ask with humor and creativity. Ask from the heart. Be prepared to give something in order to get something. Ask repeatedly, and be gracious in accepting a no.
I love all of that. Yeah, I'm thumbs up to every single one of those.
I just wonder if there's one you might add.
Well, I will say this. People lose their enthusiasm. Here's the biggest problem with asking. People lose their enthusiasm. They forget. They absolutely forget how wonderful this is all going to be. The very reason they're asking. So if I'm asking for $100,000 loan to start a business, And I've got trepidation, I'm afraid, and I'm all nervous and defensive and all of that, I have forgotten how great that business is going to be. And even a banker wants to feel the enthusiasm, wants to get the vision, wants to really get the feeling for it. So that's what we forget to do.
That's fantastic. We're right out of time, so I want to thank Kyle in the studio for keeping us on air. I want to thank you, Steve, for being a mentor and a coach and a guest and all of that. And I want to thank you at home for listening. So until next week, have fun, learn heaps, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.